This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, a new wave of coronavirus infections in the United States and the race for the White House. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you from my makeshift home studio in Washington, D.C. Coronavirus cases have spiked, particularly in the south and west of the country. Arizona, Texas, Florida, and Southern California have become the epicenters of COVID-19. The Washington Post reports that cases increased nearly 50% as states relaxed quarantine rules and began opening their economies. Now, many of these states are reimposing closures, especially for bars and recreation. Many states are now mandating that face masks be worn in public. What's more disturbing is that the rise in infections is occurring among young people between the ages of 20 and 44. U.S. President Donald Trump's approval ratings have slumped in the wake of the ever-present coronavirus pandemic, which is slowing the economic recovery. In Politico newspaper, Caitlin Oprisco writes that nearly 6 in 10 voters give the president negative marks for his handling of the pandemic. Mr. Trump's job approval sank to 39%. Oprisco goes on to say that the new poor numbers for the president come as presumptive Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, opens up as much as a double-digit lead in some swing states, with Election Day only 4 months away. Washington Post reporters Robert Costa, Ashley Parker, and John Dossey cite the New York Times Siena College polls that put Mr. Trump behind Joe Biden in 6 states that he won in 2016 and are pivotal to his reelection path, including Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Several national polls indicate that Mr. Trump is losing ground with seniors and among some white voters with and without college degrees. Can Mr. Trump rebound in the next 4 months when on November 2nd, Americans cast votes for president? All 435 seats in the lower chamber of Congress and 35 of the 100 Senate seats. To make sense of the ever tumultuous U.S. political landscape, we welcome our favorite political analysts, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome back to the program. John Fortier, let me begin with you. And before we get into domestic politics, I'd like to get your take on some press reports this week indicating that Russian military intelligence offered Taliban militants bounties for killing American and coalition troops in Afghanistan. And equally important that President Trump failed to take any action against Moscow after being briefed about the plot. A number of bipartisan lawmakers are rather concerned over this development. John Fortier, what's your take on this?
It's a very serious subject. I guess I'm a little reluctant to weigh in. The story is developing and people are trying to find out more of what has happened. And, you know, it obviously feeds into political narratives that are already pre-existing. Democrats worry that Donald Trump is too close to Russia. We don't know everything. And the question is, did the president know about this? Was he briefed? Did he ignore it? You know, I think there's still a lot to come out that Congress is going to investigate. Often there are different views within the intelligence community. Did this get into some briefing materials? Did it get to the president directly? Did his leadership talk to him? So I don't want to dismiss this. It's a very serious issue. But I also think we're premature to really say what happened and whether it's going to have a significant effect.
Jim Kessler, do you think it's a bit premature to say anything right now? I mean, in terms of what the implications are, you know, if confirmed, even some families of U.S. soldiers who were killed in Afghanistan in the past year are starting to want answers. What's your take on this particular development?
My first take is I'm not surprised that Russia is doing this, but what I'm surprised about is that the Trump administration has done nothing about it, and it seems that they knew about it, and it seems that the president knew about it. And we have a situation where Russia helped this president get elected. I'm not going to go and say that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. That is still an open question and that people have differing views. But there's no doubt that Putin and Russia put the thumb on the scale and did everything that they could to elect this president. So the president has been incredibly lax when it comes to Russia, when it comes to Putin. He has, I think, done Russia's bidding. In Europe, he has destabilized our alliances with the NATO countries. He is not a strong partner for Ukraine, which is in a hot war against Russia. So this is just more evidence that the allegiance of this country and this president is leaning towards Russia for reasons that seem fairly nefarious.
All right, gentlemen, now let's move on to election politics. So back to you, John Fortier. President Trump's behind in the polls against Biden, even in fundraising. Former Vice President Joe Biden outraised Trump in two consecutive months. Mr. Trump is wanting to ignore the pandemic. He wants to move on, you know, open the economy. He started his rallies again. We saw him in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Phoenix, Arizona, but he didn't get the same numbers that he usually likes to see at his rallies. How do you see Mr. Trump's strategy going forward?
Well, look, things have changed pretty dramatically for Donald Trump. If we went back to February before our pandemic really kicked in, I wouldn't say the president was a strong favorite to win, but certainly he was in a pretty good position, the best he'd been in. He was certainly probably going to be a close election, but his numbers had gone up. He was going to run as incumbents run on peace and prosperity, accomplishment plus his policies. And that changed dramatically. Again, some will attribute better or worse management of the COVID crisis, other things. But the fact is, the economy, which was very good, is troubled, is bad. And also people are uncertain that it might get worse. And the pandemic, while there have been some positive signs occasionally, there also are renewed negative signs or worries about increasing cases and a second wave and how we'll do this. And so the uncertainty of things, the economy, all of these things make it hard to make that typical incumbent argument that things are going well, stay with the current person. And you know, I think the president is fighting that. He's got his set of issues, more populist issues that we fought the last election on, but he doesn't have that issue of the economy is good and things are stable and peaceful, and is hoping somehow to restore that before the election in order to do well.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, it does appear that he wants to go back to the 2016 playbook, that is President Trump. He's doubling down on his so-called base. He seems to want, I guess, what some analysts say is a culture war centering on race and national symbols. There's the politics of mask wearing. He's defending Confederate monuments. He's ignoring white power statements. Can he win by doubling down on his base, in your view?
He can't win that way. Look, this has been a very bad year for him. And as John pointed out, February, the economy looked pretty good. You'd have to say that it was, at the very least, a coin flip election at that point. But Trump did not get the Democratic nominee that he wanted. Joe Biden was the candidate that he feared, and Joe Biden got the nomination. He did everything he could to make sure Biden wouldn't get the nomination. Democratic voters voted otherwise. And so he has the opponent he does not want. He has clearly mishandled the COVID crisis. The United States is doing worse than just about any other country that you can imagine that's not named Brazil. And part of it is on him. He does not believe the experts. He dragged his feet for about 6 or 8 weeks. You make a 1 week mistake with this virus and it's devastating. You make a 6 or 8 week mistake and it's catastrophic. I think the country's paying an economic price and he's paying a political price. The other thing is if you look at the swing state elections, and there are really six states that are going to decide this election, there have been 26 polls in the month of June in those six states. Trump is trailing in 23 of them. So something has got to change, and he's trying to double down on some of his old chestnuts. Nationalism, some version of white power, anti-immigration message. I think the country is moving beyond this, at least suburban voters and some swing voters. They're looking for a healer in this election, not a polarizer. And Biden happens to be the healer. So right now, I think Biden does have a real advantage. We're 4 months from Election Day. A lot can change. But right now, I think the president's team feels like things aren't looking up for him.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way, and they join me via Microsoft Teams as we continue to social distance during the coronavirus pandemic. And we are discussing the tumultuous political landscape in the run-up to the 2020 U.S. elections. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. And that is how our shout out fan connected with us. And here's a big shout out to this loyal fan, Professor Edjuxman Edjux. He's a lecturer at the University of Calabar. in the beautiful port city of Calabar, which is the capital of Cross River State in southern Nigeria near the Cameroon border. Thanks so much for your kind comments, Professor. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our politics edition of Encounter, and back to you, John Fortier, continuing on Mr. Trump's rather rocky path to re-election. Another one of his issues is he wants to attempt again to repeal Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. This is also seen by many analysts as a rather tricky strategy in the midst of a pandemic. How do the Republicans see this as a winner for Mr. Trump if he continues along that path? Again, this is Obamacare, which is becoming more and more popular during this pandemic.
Yeah, look, I think the dynamic has changed in a way that I think what the president originally was trying to do was to have a kind of more positive message or some sort of plan that was not just getting rid of Obamacare on the table, ready to go. And I think that's kind of fallen by the wayside. If Obamacare was unpopular during the Obama years, of course, it became popular, especially for those who wanted to change it. And I think the Republicans have had problems with that generally. So I don't think that's an issue. Look, I think the core populist issues are still important to him. He really does need some sort of argument that things are coming back. And I think that both from the pandemic and the economy standpoint, something, some movement in that direction might help him. And then ultimately, while I agree with Jim that Joe Biden was the strongest of the candidates and the one that he was least likely to face, it's still true that Joe Biden, as much as he's a national figure, is not as known as many people think. You could imagine a campaign in the fall where it probably gets negative on both sides, but the vice president might get defined more negatively, and we will see what happens. So I think the president really does want to run on his nationalist issues. He wants to have a message that things are coming back and that I think he'll make an argument against Joe Biden. That's the optimistic scenario of how he comes out of a hole where he is definitely in a significant hole at this point.
Well, turning to you, Jim Kessler, there's no question that it's going to be a pretty dirty campaign. There'll be a lot of negative ads. How do you see Biden's strategy going forward? This is 4 months. One day is an eternity in politics. How would you assess Joe Biden's strategy? He's coming out a bit more. He's not in his so-called basement. He is getting out, doing limited, not rallies, but briefings. What does he have to do to maintain his lead, in your view?
In terms of numbers, there are two groups of voters that Biden really needs to focus on. One is there needs to be a strong turnout of the African-American vote. It's a large vote for Democrats. They're solidly Democratic voters. The question is how many of those voters turn out. So he needs to turn out those voters. The battleground, however, in this race is going to be the suburbs, and in particular, the suburbs of six key swing states, three of them in the Midwest, three of them Sunbelt states. And those are the areas of the country that changed dramatically between 2016 and 2018, you know, when the Democrats won the Congress. So he needs to continue that strong Democratic, new Democratic support in those suburban areas. And I agree with John Fortier. Joe Biden is fairly well defined for a challenger, but he is not really well defined for most voters. They know of him as Obama's former vice president, as a more centrist Democrat, but they really don't know his vision, where he wants to take the country, what it would mean to have a Joe Biden presidency, beyond that he wants to be a unifier and bring the country together. Being a unifier is a very positive thing at this moment, but that probably is not enough, you know, as a way to define yourself.
So he's going to have to be more explicit about what he is for, certainly health care, that we need to keep the Affordable Care Act. And I'm sure he'll be talking about other policies and get out more, even if in a limited setting. Yeah. So back to you, John Fortier. We're going to get into this voting by mail again. We had a wonderful conversation with you a week or so ago because this is your expertise. And I encourage people to listen to that Press Conference USA interview. But we need to pursue this because based on President Trump's statements and those by Attorney General Bill Barr, analysts say that part of the Republican strategy to win in November is maybe to try to undermine alternative voting methods, such as mail-in ballots and even maybe early voting. But these alternative methods are going to be even more crucial as we still navigate the pandemic. There are going to be fewer poll workers who are notoriously older people. Polling places may be closed. So the integrity and legitimacy of the election, say analysts, will really depend on having these alternative voting options. But if President Trump or Attorney General Barr and others try to denigrate them and say, well, if mail-in ballots happen, then the election will be at risk. How do you see that? The possibility that even though fraud is very minimal with mail-in ballots, that if the rhetoric continues in that direction, that this could maybe mislead people.
Yeah, well, as you know, Carol, I'm not the biggest fan of voting by mail and haven't been for a while. And I share some of the president's concerns, not the level of worry that he has or the idea that there is widespread fraud in this area. But ideally, we would move in other directions. That's not going to happen. We've been moving in the last 30 years to doing more voting by mail. Also, I will note more early voting at polling places and less voting on election day. That number will inevitably go up, and then it will go up by even more because of our crisis, because both some administrators want to have that type of voting and also because voters call for it. And for that reason, I think this election will become messy in many ways. And right now, I think the main arguments being made by the president and Attorney General Barr are against further expansion of it. And I don't think it's practical to expand it in every state in the same way. I think some states are going to still look pretty traditional. Here's my worry. All of our voting systems, vote by mail, voting in person, voting early, are going to be under pressure. People are going to have a harder time voting. We're not going to have as many poll workers at sites. And we need more resources and we need more to do. And we're going to be trying new things. And as much as some people like voting by mail, doing a lot of it suddenly is not the recipe for doing things as well as if you had a chance to roll it out more slowly. So could I see problems? Yes. And then I also worry strongly that we're going to have some delays in the election counting. Look, some of those delays are understandable and we shouldn't think that there are nefarious methods to it, reasons for it. But if we see an election that's undecided on election day and a lot of ballots outstanding and some confusion from new states doing new things, I don't think that's a good recipe for legitimacy. And some may worry the president's going to attack that. I think it could be attacked on all sides. The lawyers get involved. So I think we need to do this, do more and have better systems. But I think that's got to be balanced against the idea of not trying to do everything and change the world and the way we vote, so that we have some semblance of stability of counting ballots in a clearer and somewhat faster way so that people don't challenge an election, which we don't want to be seen as controversial after election day.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, I certainly understand what John Fortier is saying, but we're 4 months out of the election. There's no need to rush. I mean, we have time, even though we don't have much time, to educate people that instant results may not be available this time because there are going to be more mail-in ballots. But what we're hearing from, for example, Attorney General Barr and even Mr. Trump is that from the get-go, you know, this is going to be rigged. And I think that what we want from leaders or what many voters would like is solid information and education. And it doesn't seem like it's coming. So at least from certain quarters, what are Democrats worried about with regard to the upcoming election? Do you think that given President Trump's rhetoric and his denigration of voting by mail, even though he himself did cast a mail-in ballot for the primaries, are they worried that this may result in needless controversy over the election results because they're setting the stage, Attorney General Barr and President Trump setting the stage for chaos, which notwithstanding the difficulty, it doesn't have to be that way. How do you see it? One more thing, I think that mostly Democrats and critics are saying that this kind of rhetoric is actually code for trying to suppress the vote because suppressing the vote could potentially benefit Republicans in this regard. What are your thoughts?
The list of things that Democrats are worried about in this election is so long that we could not cover it in this program. Because Donald Trump won an election that people didn't think he was going to win, and that there was Russian interference in the election and all sorts of strange email hackings going on. Democrats just feel like he's Jason from Friday the 13th, like Trump will come back from the dead and do something to win the election or steal the election. Here's my view on this, not shared by all Democrats. I think that the mechanics of the election, the voting, the counting, is the Y2K of 2020. I think there's going to be all sorts of worrying and hand-wringing about it. But I believe, and this is what we've seen thus far in the primaries, even when the races have been decided, turnout has been enormous. And even in Wisconsin, when the pandemic was raging in that state, people lined up and they voted. And we just had primaries in New York and in Kentucky, you know, with some pretty high COVID rates there. And the turnout was enormous. I expect that we're going to have huge turnout in this election, even though that's not what Trump wants. And yes, on certain states, particularly Arizona, which is one of the swing states, we're not going to see results for 7 days. That's the way it works in Arizona. Most of the voting there is already by mail. But I do think that this will be more smooth than people think, because I expect that people are going to find their way to vote.
All right, gentlemen, as we close, just a quick comment from you about some favorite races you're watching, particularly in the general election. But also, Jim Kessler referenced the primaries in New York and Kentucky. We saw interesting candidates coming out. What are some favorite races that just took place for you, John Fortier, and some that you're looking forward to in November?
Well, we've seen on both sides some primary challenges be successful. We always see that to some extent. Mostly it's in safe Democratic places where there have been more progressive, more diverse candidates, sometimes beating older establishment incumbents. On the Republican side, an interesting incumbent lost just recently to a much more populist young woman from Colorado. But you're looking ahead, I think what we're all looking at, especially, is the Senate, which back in February, you know, looked like Republicans had a decent chance of holding the Senate, maybe losing a little bit, holding the majority. If Joe Biden does well, and he's doing well in the polls now, it opens up a whole slew of additional Senate seats, additional six or so, in addition to the three we'd been talking about originally. And that certainly opens up a path to the majority through places in Maine and Iowa and Georgia, North Carolina, and even perhaps places like Montana or Kansas. So I do think watching the Senate and how big a Biden margin is if he wins is something that we're all going to be watching, because it's something that's changed since February pretty dramatically.
Last word to you, Jim Kessler. As John Fortier said, it looks like a slew of additional Senate seats may be opening up, which could lead to a majority for Democrats in the Senate. What are you looking for, and what has heartened you or not in recent primaries and coming up in November?
Well, I am optimistic that Democrats are going to retake the Senate, in part because I expect Joe Biden to beat Donald Trump by a fairly sizable margin. Here's one of the things that I think is very exciting right now that has just happened and is a new trend. So in the 1990s, we had an election that was known as the Year of the Woman. A whole bunch of female candidates won races, and it started to really change the House and the Senate in terms of the gender makeup. I think this is the year of the African-American candidate. And you're seeing in races, especially in races where the voters don't even know that much about the candidates, it might be a low knowledge primary, and the African-American candidate is winning a lot of these races because they're saying, you know, I just think, you know, after the police killings and the demonstrations that we've seen, I think a lot of voters are saying, I want more African-American representation in my elected bodies. So even a race that was seemingly safe, like Lindsey Graham, Republican from Senate, running for, you know, an easy reelection, he has an African-American opponent who's pretty impressive. You might see an upset even in a state like South Carolina, which is so solidly Republican. I believe that there is a hunger for more diversity in American politics. And the Democrats are the diverse party right now. Republicans, if you look at the caucuses in the House and the Senate, they're about as diverse as the field of the Masters tournament. So I think that is an exciting development that I'm looking forward to see how that plays out in November.
Good. Well, let me put my two cents in along your lines. Two interesting races that just took place. We have Elliot Engel, longstanding representative from New York, the chairman of the House Foreign Relations Committee. He's out. He's been there 30 years. He was replaced by Jamal Bowman, who is African-American. And the seat of longstanding Democratic Congresswoman Nita Lowey, chairwoman of the very powerful House Appropriations Committee, Mondaire Jones, a liberal, gay African-American, won that primary. Meantime, that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests once again, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.